The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn. We've got an awesome show for you today. Thank you for tuning in. In this half hour, we will be featuring an interview with David Lieberman, who has written a book, How Free Will Works. So we're going to talk about your free will. Obviously, you have the free will to tune in, and we thank you so much. We have a wonderful assortment of music today. There's a theme, which I'm not going to say what the theme is to this week's music, but if you contact me either sometime during the show, after the show, and let me know what that theme is, and you're correct, we'll send you a CD from the Jewish Hour Archives. Yes, indeedy. There's a theme. The portion of the week is the portion of Shlach. We've got some really nice insights. This is a good Bible story. It's the story of the spies, chapter 13 of the book of Numbers. Absolutely fantastic Hasidic story, one that I've never heard before, and you will be delighted by it at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A member of the Al-Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of the Hamas terrorist organization, died Friday when, actually, he was killed Friday, when a tunnel he was in collapsed in Gaza near the Israeli border. Cause for the collapse is unknown. They didn't build it right, like, duh. Here we go, Anne. Here we go again. For the second straight week, Hamas terrorists in Gaza launched Grad rockets into Israel. The rockets landed in open fields near Ashkelon. IAF planes responded by blowing three Hamas buildings up in Gaza. Little tit for tat, and just like, it's only the beginning of the summer. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Dan Shapiro met with Druze community leaders requesting the U.S. to be more involved in the fighting between rebel forces and the regime army of President Bashar al-Assad in Syria. ISIS fighters in southern Syria killed five Druze this week. This is big news in Israel and has absolutely no consequence to us here in America. But it's like all over the place. It's just like everywhere you look in Israeli news. Orange, which I never even heard of this company. Orange, a major front. My daughter even called me up. It was 3 o'clock in the morning to tell me about this. This is like how big this is. Let's start again. Orange, a major French cell phone company, partly owned by the French government, confirmed that it was planning to leave the Israeli market, but said the move was strictly business and had nothing to do with the boycott, divestment, and whatever the S stands for. Movement. The statement by Orange came after its CEO said at a news conference in Cairo that he would cut ties with Israel with an Israeli partner, the Israeli partner is actually called partner, tomorrow if he could do so without incurring financial penalties. They just extended their contract to work in Israel for the next 10 years. And finally, police, I don't have any good news to end off on, I'm sorry, but police are searching for the vandals who managed to desecrate a South San Francisco football field with a 10-foot-wide swastika. The vandals likely laid the huge white swastika fashioned out of white tile pieces that snapped together shortly after graduation ceremonies at the El Camino High School. And they're still looking for these people, and that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line David Friedman, who's a PhD, is a noted speaker and award-winning author with renowned insight into the human condition. He's written 10 books translated into 26 languages. We're going to talk about how free will works, the blueprint to take charge of your life, health, and happiness. David Lieberman, welcome to the Jewish Hour.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. I appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas with you.
Wonderful. Tell us a little about yourself.
Wow, that's a large question.
30 seconds.
Okay, right. So thank God I've had the opportunity to work on a wide spectrum of ideas in various fields. I actually do some work for law enforcement, FBI and NSA, and tactics of interview and interrogation. I also travel around talking on chinuch, parenting, shalom bias, building relationships. I go into companies and do conflict resolution. And my new book, as you mentioned, How Free Will Works, really sort of ties a lot of this together, talks about the whole umbrella of human nature in the context of the larger picture of reality and how that whole cosmic world works.
Okay, so we're going to talk about free will and what it really means to you. Okay, so there is a statement in the Talmud that says, Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyir shemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except your decision making involving moral decisions.
Why do we
have to believe that? Why don't we just think everything's just like evolved and everything that happens is merely a coincidence, and if life is bad,
right. Well,
it's because you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right. You can if you want, but you wouldn't be living in reality. And what's interesting is that, you know, there are enough people, you know, out there who want to recuse us of responsibility, you know, by watering down some idea of objective morality and simply saying, you know, if there's no right or wrong, then I can't feel guilty for doing what I want. So the idea about having bechira, having free will, is startling to some people because it comes with it the burden of obligation and responsibility. It's much easier to think of myself as a function of programming and a confluence of circumstances and environments and genetics that bring me to an inevitable conclusion to wherever my life is, and I'm responsible no more for my actions, you know, than, you know, a machine would be for it. So, you know, it's not healthy. And if you look around at the people around you, take spirituality out of the equation, emotional health means that I have the ability to see, accept, and respond to my world in a responsible way. That requires me to feel a degree of obligation and recognize that I have some sense of control, because absent that, you end up with a phenomenon called learned helplessness, which pretty much means is that I can't control anything. It's all out of my hands. Everything's accidental or circumstantial. And it really leads to neuroses, to paranoia, to anxiety and depression. And one of the most powerful ways to regain that sense of emotional health is to recognize the larger true reality. And that is that the quality of our lives come down to the quality of our choices.
Okay. You just gave a very good psychological expression why it's better to believe that there's such a thing called free will. But
Right. Why
do I have to believe free will? I'm going to resign myself that everything's coincidence, that the things the way are going are the way they're going. I'm going to be a moral person anyway, regardless, because my mom taught me to be. But,
right.
You know, we have this thing called divine providence. It says, Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyir shemayim. The expression says, you have control of nothing except your decision to make a right or wrong decision.
Right. So the question is good and concise. Unfortunately, well, the good and bad news is that I'll answer it as best I can in 2 minutes, but there's a reason why there's a 400-page book about it.
Right.
Because it does lend itself towards a lot of nuances. But certainly everything that happens, Hashem orchestrates and runs. Now, within that reality, we have been given the ability to make free will choices. And our free will choices does not mean that we can override what Hashem wants per se, but it does mean that we can shift and change conditions and circumstances and affect to a very large extent the quality of our lives. Even if we can't affect this outcome per se, that doesn't mean that we can't enjoy a much different quality of life based on the quality of our choices. And the ability to choose right from wrong, which is ultimately the only thing we have, that moral capacity is what gives us the option, the ability to enjoy a much greater quality of life.
Okay, now, so let's talk about the opposite of free choice. Let's talk about divine providence. Let's talk about the first part of the statement. God's in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. What does that do for me?
Well, first, it takes the pressure off. You don't have to micromanage, you know, reality. God's in charge of that. Having said that, it moves you into reality. In other words, you don't have to. It allows the anxious person to feel less anxious because this is going to be the way God wants it. The problem, though, the asterisk that goes there is that doesn't mean that a person can lie in bed all day watching TV and eating potato chips and expect that reality will unfold according to God's expectations, independent of our actions and attitude.
Well, it sort of does, but it'll be a different reality.
Fair enough. That's right. It will be a different reality and one that's clearly much less pleasant. So, you know, we are charged with the ability to do our shtalas, to put in our effort, and the outcome is up to God. But our being given over the ability to affect our lives, the lives of people around us, creation itself, is something that God gave us, and the ability to have free will and to use it clearly is the greatest gift because it charges us, it empowers us to really recognize and be cognizant of the full breadth of what it is that we can control. Now, as you said, rightly so, we are not in control of the universe. God is. But this dichotomy is obviously fleshed out better in the book. But the ability to make good quality choices changes not only my perception of reality, but to a large extent, it does affect how reality unfolds. Because if I'm living a certain quality of life, doing certain things, God then will change what it is that may be good for me because my vessel, my kli, has expanded itself to allow a greater flow of good fortune.
Okay.
In much the same way that if I were negligent, then God might constrict what will happen to me and will be less pleasant. So it's in accordance with God's will, but we sort of had our hand in the faucet, and we either open it or close it.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with David Lieberman, who has written a book, How Free Will Works. We're talking about, obviously, free will and the opposite of free will, which we would consider divine providence. Okay, so the Talmud says that 40 days before a child is born, the soul is brought before the Almighty, and it's decided when this person's going to be born, when the person's going to die, who they're going to marry, how smart they're going to be, how much money they're going to make, how many children they're going to have, where they're going to live. And then it says, but it's not decided as if the person's going to be good or bad. Okay, so now there are certain things that are already pre-programmed in there. And what's going to happen to me at any given time during the course of my lifetime? Okay, so let's say somebody is casually walking down the street and somebody comes up and punches them. Okay, so now it's divine providence I got punched, but it's the person's free will who punched me. So how are we going to explain the interaction then, David Lieberman, between free will and divine providence?
Right. So first, I respectfully suggest that they're not opposites. They're part of a integrated whole. Divine providence operates within, or rather free will operates within the context of divine providence. So if you're walking along and somebody punches you, there are sort of a number of different layers to look at that. First off, all of the Chazal, the rabbis, agree that negligence can undermine any decree, meaning that if a person chooses to throw himself into a fire, even if he wasn't meant to die, he may very well get burned and die. So there is a concept that we can remove the ability for some degree of providence over us. And the providence, as the Rambam explains, is based on our level of action. So the more responsible we are, the greater the degree of providence we have. The less responsible, the less providence. And see, now you get into a fascinating concept we call mazel. Mazel, which is loosely defined as luck, really is the confluence of factors and circumstances that allow a person to fulfill their mission in life. Our mazel is synchronized to our tikkun, why it is we're here, and our tikkun to the larger tikkun olam, the fixing of the world. So we have a born into a certain family with certain IQ, certain environment, certain hereditary and genetic factors, and so on. All this is part of our mazel so that we can fix whatever it is that we need to. And our mazel is sort of like a spiritual coat of arms. It sticks to us and will sort of, you know, it's sort of like the GPS recalculating. It'll keep us on the right road. However, if a person chooses to opt out and to act in a way that is so objectively different from what he is supposed to be doing, then that mazel no longer offers him protection. And then he can sort of be cast to what we call nature. Nature brings into a whole of the conversation, as we explained, that nature isn't really randomness. It too exists within the larger context of divine providence. So the very long, rambling answer to your very good, concise question is, if somebody punches you, on one hand, yes, he is free will, and divine providence allowed for that to happen. But here's the point that people have to understand. Just because God allows for something to happen doesn't mean that it had to happen. We confuse those two way too often. We assume if someone gets punched in the stomach, physically, or metaphorically, or literally, that it had to happen. Our actions may have played a role in being punched in the stomach. Now, it may be necessary for our good and for our growth, in which case there's no way we could have avoided it. Or we could have been negligent, and which case we would have put ourselves into a situation that we didn't have to be put into in the first place.
Okay, so now then, you're raising another question. Just to let you know, I, let's see, how long ago was it? 1984. Okay, that's a long time ago. There was a scholarly journal that was being published in Australia on Jewish thought. I was in Australia at the time. And I told the editor that I was going to sit down and write a piece on the interaction of free will and divine providence. And he said, that's great. There really isn't anything really good in English yet. Mm-hmm. So I sat down and I spent 3 weeks investigating and writing and writing and writing and writing. And after 3 weeks of some serious writing, I realized that I had just written into a circle and I was back to where I started from. So the whole treatise went right into the trash. And I told the guy, I'm sorry, I couldn't get out of the loop, because there are just so many things that just sort of like interact too much. Like, for example, you said that a person can't do anything God doesn't want to happen, because by saying that a person said, I could do something God doesn't want to happen, means I'm stronger than God. And we believe God is a supreme being. You can't do anything that God doesn't want you to do. So I'm proposing that if that guy suddenly decides, you know what, I'm going to throw myself into a fire, I'm going to say that it was divine providence from the onset, that person died exactly the moment that then God decided that person was going to die.
Right. So I would respectfully suggest not so fast. And the reason is as follows. Let's say you have one big cosmic game and it's got rules, and it's run specifically according to the rules set by the referee, capital R. If one person at one point is given an unearned point, right, in the game, that renders all the other points illegitimate. In order to understand your question of why it is that that person died, even though God, that may not have been the original quote-unquote plan, you have to take a step back and appreciate why we have free will in the first place. And the short answer to that is we have free will for allow us to choose. We choose to be good, as you say, or to be bad. This mechanism allows for us to be more like God, who is not dependent on anyone or anything. He chooses to anthropomorphize, he chooses to give, and we are the receiver. If we want to be closer to God in this world and the next, we have to be more similar to him, which means we have to be a giver. That requires free will. If we're forced to give by, you know, the gun to our head, we're not really giving, we're being robbed. So the mechanism of free will exists for our ultimate good, as the Ramchal explains, for us to be closer to God. Now, the reason why that person needed to die when he gets thrown into the fire is because, when he threw himself into the fire, even though God may not really have quote-unquote wanted him to, is because it preserves the larger integrity of the rules of free will, which ultimately this person will benefit from either in this world or in various incarnations. So to give somebody something for him to just be saved by the fire, and some people certainly merited to do so, there's a whole number of chapters on why that happens, but If he's not saved by it, it's because he's thrown himself into laws of nature, which God created, and it's all for the larger good, the larger picture, to maintain the integrity of free will.
Okay, let's look at it then exactly the opposite way, as to how much free choice are we really afforded, David Lieberman, meaning, I'm assuming right now you're sitting in an office, I'm assuming? Are you
Yeah, home office.
Okay, now, everybody knows that Jews don't eat ham. Do you right this second have the freedom of choice not to eat a ham sandwich?
Sure, but I have a clarity, the same way, not to say the same way Malachim, but you know, angels have a certain clarity. You know, we sometimes believe that they don't have free will. They have free will. They wouldn't purposely contravene the will of God because their clarity is such that it is just so absurd to do so. And we have certain clarity at different levels depending on our spiritual level. But there are plenty of people that would eat a ham sandwich who are Jewish, not recognizing, not having that sense of clarity. So we have our, what we call Madrega, spiritual level, and which is why you can't judge anyone until you walked a mile in their Crocs. I think that's Art School's translation, right? Is because we don't know what their spiritual level is. So what may be a challenge for me may not be for you and vice versa. So we don't always, you're right, we don't have free will in every area. Some things are above that Madrega line, things out of our reach, and some are below it. They're not even, we don't struggle with whether or not to clunk an old lady over the head with a brick or not. It's simply below our Madrega. But on that thin band in between out of our reach and below our reach lies bechira, lies free will, and that is where the ultimate battle happens.
Okay, I'm going to take it. I'm just going to just say I politely disagree with you a little bit. I'm going to say,
please,
you really don't have the free choice right this second to eat a ham sandwich. And I'm going to assume, because we're talking over the phone, the reason why you don't have free choice to eat a ham sandwich is because, by divine providence, there is no ham sandwich for you to eat. If you were to decide, I'm going to pick myself up and go down to the local convenience store and then pick up a ham sandwich, then okay, we say. But right now, as you're talking to me, in your environment that you are, by divine providence, currently finding yourself, you don't have that choice of eating a ham sandwich.
But that question, respectfully, is the same as saying I don't have free will to fly to California without an airplane. In other words, right, there are certain physical constraints that prevent me from doing things. When we talk about free will, we talk about a moral choice. In order to have a choice, it means I have to have the capacity to act. If there's no ham sandwich in my house, you're right, I can't eat it, in much the same way that I can't fly to California without an airplane. But if I had the ham sandwich, you know, we could say, but I would also say that it doesn't necessarily mean I have this free will in that case, because the consequences are so vivid and so clear, I couldn't override that. So it really is below the point of my Madrega, of my free will point. As Rev Dessler explains, he says, free will happens, you know, on that band, in that space, when we could choose to or choose not to. For me, it's not a shaila, it's not a question. So I don't even make that choice. So you're right, in that respect, it's not free will. But that's okay. We've got plenty of opportunities and options to exercise free will throughout our day, and our job really is to move that bar, that Madrega, that spiritual level, higher and higher and higher by each and every day, making more responsible choices. We move it higher, and we become more spiritually refined, and in doing so, closer to God.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the free choice has to do with what would be referred to in the books as tests from God. And I mean, for example, people are tested all the time. It's like I say, my demise was the invention of the snooze button, because when I had this little wind-up Big Ben alarm clock and it rang, if I didn't get out of bed, I didn't get out of bed. But now I get 9 minutes. And that's like, do I get up? Do I get to 9 minutes? Do I get up? Do I get to 9 minutes? By the time I'm done thinking, already the 9 minutes have already passed. So, like, for example, there was recently a demographic map was published by the city of Oak Park, and it was a really cool map, listed all the businesses around Oak Park. Oak Park is, you're living in New Jersey. Oak Park is called a family town. Around the businesses are located around the perimeter of the city, and everything within the city is all totally 100% houses. So it's easy to say that you go across 9 Mile, up Coolidge to 11 Mile, across 11 Mile, down to Greenfield, and back down to 9 Mile. And that's basically the business deal with a little bit of stuff going on in towards 8 Mile. And then it has a guide at the bottom of it. And listed in this guide, it had like bike business, it listed 62 restaurants, which to me just flabbergasted because I drive around the streets of Oak Park all the time. And if you ask me on the top of my head, how many restaurants are there in Oak Park? I would say 6, 8, because it's not in my lexicon, because I'm not being tested by not kosher food or going into a not kosher restaurant. I don't even notice that. And I consider that to be divine providence. God doesn't want me to be involved with that fight. I've got a different fight. So could you explain that, please?
Sure. Well, actually, it's interesting. It's something called the reticular activating system, which actually is a footnote in my book, which is why I'm able to sound much smarter than I really am by calling it that. And that is basically, it's sort of like this. You ever had the experience where you buy a car and suddenly you notice that everyone else is driving the same car that you're buying, you just bought? Right? Or you have a certain experience and then you look around and you're like, wow, that person's the same thing. So, you know, our brain really is fascinating in terms of, you know, how God created it to sort of filter out things that we don't have to or need to pay attention to. So just from a physiological level is because it's not, as you say, in your lexicon, it's not on your radar, it's not relevant to you, your brain simply filters that out. I could well assure you, you know, if they were all kosher restaurants, you would probably, you know, be able to, you know, list them off your fingertips.
I would weigh 350 pounds if they were all kosher restaurants.
Right. So we don't have the capacity to pay attention, and nor should we, to a lot of irrelevant information. So what you call hashgacha pratis, you know, certainly I'm sure there's an element of it, but on a very sort of average day-to-day physical level, it really is just a mechanism that allows for us to filter out what's unnecessary. And certainly if, let's say, for example, you had a time, you had a strong craving, you know, for non-kosher food, God may very well, you know, blind you, spiritually speaking, from seeing a certain restaurant. And that would be a good example of a hashgacha pratis, you know, make an accident happen, you know, up ahead, or a detour, a water main break, to allow you to go a different route and so on, to spare you that. But throughout our days, throughout our lives, which is why it's important, by the way, to have goals, and there's a number of chapters on willpower. You talked about the snooze button, so it brings to mind the idea you can't have free will. You can't exercise positive choices if you don't have self-control, which is why self-control is one of the most the foundation of what it means to be a human being, let alone a Jew, is to be able to rise above our nature and choose responsibly. That's why people ask me, they said, you know, why'd you fill half a book on free will, on willpower? And the answer is because if you cannot learn how to exercise self-control over yourself, it doesn't matter how much you know about free will, the cost and the consequences, you're going to lose. You need specific practical tools and strategies in order to be able to galvanize your resolve and to choose responsibly.
Okay, you answered my last question just now, so that's really cool, because we are running out of time very, very rapidly. Our guest has been David Lieberman, who's a PhD, and he wrote a book, How Free Will Works, The Blueprint to Take Charge of Your Life, Health, and Happiness. I give it 2 thumbs up, published by Feldheim, available wherever you buy Jewish books. David Lieberman, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights.
I thank you, Rabbi. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888 877-637-6968 or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Herschel Feman, here, listening to the Jewish Hour. Talk about somebody who needs to get their life together. If you need MDS detox services, it's a good beginning to get your life together. I strongly recommend you do that. Call them right now, because this is serious stuff over here. Lubavitcher Rebbe once said he has no criticism of an addict because they are not in control. So get your life back. Do it today. Well, we're continuing with our theme music today. This is Avram Fried, and he's singing a song called Shalom Aleichem. Let's listen.
Malachei Ashores, Malachei Elyoi, Miyimelech, Malachei Hamlochim, Akodosh Baruch Hu. Shalom Aleichem, Malachei Ashores.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Herschel Feman, here, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We're doing themed music now, and if you can figure out what the theme to the music is, send it off to rabbifinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com, and contact me there. Let me know, and we'll send you a CD from the Jewish Hour archives. Let us know what kind of music you like, so that we can send something that you might actually like listening to. This up next is the Barcelona Klezmer Band, and the piece they're playing is called Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom Aleichem. Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman, we got time for one more song. My daughter in Israel told me about this new rock. It's a new band. It's Sephardic hip-hop reggae rock. So you kind of like fuse those all together. The group is called The Shook, which means the marketplace. And they're playing a song called Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharet, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharet, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharet, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharet, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Ay, ay, ay. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asharet, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Bochem Shalom, Malachi Shalom, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Shalom, Malachi Shalom, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Ay, ay, ay. Bochem Shalom, Malachi Shalom, Malachi Elyon, Mimelech, Malachi Amlachim, Hakadosh Baruch Hu.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800.
Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Again, a reminder, we've been playing music of a single theme, and if you know what that theme is, you figured it out, send me a note, go to rabbifinman.com, and on the contact page, contact me, let me know what it is. Give me your name, address, what type of genre of music you like in the Jewish music field, in the Jewish music world, and we will go into the Jewish Hour archives and send you a CD of such said music. Indeed. This week is a portion of Shlach. It is found in the chapter 13 of the book of Numbers and following, and deals with the episode of the spies, famous Bible story stuff. As a result of Moses sending spies to do reconnaissance in the land of Canaan, or Canaan, the Jews wound up spending 40 years in the desert because they came back with a bad report, and the Jews were really upset, and they cried, and God said, you guys cried for nothing, and I'm going to give you what to cry about. And the decree that they should spend the 40 years in the desert, and everybody who was in that generation would die, and they each died, 15,000 of them died on that day that they came back with the bad report, which was Tisha B'Av, which is known as a black day on the Jewish calendar, because that's the day that both temples were destroyed and other things. We'll talk about it as we get closer to Tisha B'Av. It's end of July, I think, this year. Joshua, which is in the Haftarah, the prophet's reading that goes with this week's portion, also sent spies. And he was congratulated. What's a diff? What goes on here? Joshua wasn't as good as Moses. Everybody knows that. Moses was like the main man. It said that in last week's portion, that Miriam accused Moses of impropriety, and God stepped in and said, mind your own business. My man Moses is the main man. And his plan didn't work. So what's up? So we can answer this question, we can say it allegorically or with a Hasidic insight. There are seven Canaanite nations. The Canaani, the Chiti, the Prizi, the Yavusi, the Girgashi. Who am I missing? The Jebusites, we said the Yavusi, yeah. Whatever the seven, if I have to list seven, I can only get six. I just knocked six off for you. We're told that they're analogous of bad character traits. That's why it says that the Jewish people were told that when you enter the land of Canaan, to wipe out the local indigenate Canaanite tribes because they represent the bad character traits of an individual. So what was Moses trying to do by sending the spies is he was trying to do it on his own. He was saying, well, God said, you don't need to send spies. I know what's going on. And finally, God says, Shlach lecha, Anashim, send spies yourself. I don't need them. I'm not going to do it. And I mean, you know what? It's going to be pretty bad what's going to happen. As far as character goes, who we are, we really don't have a lot of control of that. If you like Brussels sprouts, I can't tell you not to like Brussels sprouts. It's something you really don't have control over. You put it in your mouth, you go, delicious, or disgusting. You have no control over that. Moses wanted to exercise control even of that part of a person's persona, and he fell flat on his face. It had really disastrous consequences because it's not really even expected of us. Comes now Joshua. Joshua sent spies to check out the city of Jericho. Only, since it's our first stop, it's located, Jericho, till this day, is located right on the border by the Jordan River. You cross over the Jordan, yep, there you are, Jericho. It's an external part of Israel, you might say, the land of Canaan. The word in Hebrew, Jericho, is Yericho. It comes from the word reich, meaning smell. Smell is an external sense in the body. And the spies that Joshua sent, and his goal was not to control what we like, what we don't like, our emotions, our persona, who we are. His deal was You can control your thought, speech, and action. You can control your conscience, which is allegorized with the word yericha, smell. You don't do everything that you want to do. You exhibit self-control. If you don't exhibit self-control in what you do, you're going to either be in a prison or in an insane asylum. Likewise, also, we control what we say. We don't say everything we want to say. You really want to tell that guy off, but you know it's better that you don't. You can likewise control everything that you're thinking. I don't want to think that thought. That's a terrible thought to think. I'm not going to think that thought anymore. It's basically what the entire book of Tanya is about. It's a basic Hasidic philosophical work written over 200 years ago by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it describes how a person can be the best person they can be, how they can conquer their own personal Jericho. That's why Joshua was successful, because he didn't bite off more than he can chew. He bit off. He is able to tackle that which he's able to do. And indeed, from this we learn the lesson, because what happened when Joshua fought the battle of Jericho? The walls came tumbling down. No more walls. No more Jericho. We have the ability to be, because we are human beings, at the very least, to control every action, speech, and thought. Speaking of which, we've got to control ourselves right now. We've got to stop talking and take a quick commercial break. Don't go away. The most exciting Hasidic story is coming up next. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. Go right down the homepage. It's got a connection, or there's a little tab on the side. Contact us. Some website. It's just like I was involved Friday. I needed to send a message off to this to somebody at this organization, and their contact page was like buried. It was just like, first I hit the well, where am I going? I don't see contact anywhere over here. I hit the About Us page, and then in the About Us, it said who we are. And then I hit the Who We Are page. And then it said our staff. And then I hit the staff page. And then that's where I hit the found the contact. No, we do things easy, simple. It's right there. You open up rabbifinman.com. You contact me. Tell me what the theme of the music was on this week's show. You get a CD. You know how it's easy. It's really cool. You'll also find archived editions of the show. You'll have find archived editions of the Hasidic U story, the U Parsha, which are videos of yours truly conveying insights into the portion of the week in the calendar events, the E Parsha, which is me doing things in the written form for those people who are more visual than audio per se. And you can check out both. They're very short. I do everything quick. Everything by me. It has to be right, succinct, right, go into your brain, have fun, and have a nice day. That's the way I do things. And we also have the very important donations page. It's June. We are still trying to do May. So we're going to hope for another two. For we had two last month. Unfortunately, they were from 3 months and 2 months ago. So we didn't pay last month. So we now, let's see if we can, if we got rid of 2 months worth of debt to the station here. People at Salem Communications are really sweet people. They really are. We did April and, no, we did March and April in May. Now we need to do May and June. In June, you are the one that's going to put us over the top. Go right now to rabbifinman.com. Click on the donations page. It's quick. It's fast. It's easy. If you have a PayPal account, it takes 30 seconds. You click the button. You click how much it is you want. You go to your PayPal account. The money comes out of your PayPal account, goes into my PayPal account. No problem. If you don't have a PayPal account, it'll take you 3 minutes to add in, to enter in all the numbers. If you don't like doing internet donating, I understand. That's fine. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. And if you think that you can only send $5 and it's not worth it, Believe me, if all the people listening to this show would send me $5 every month, I would spend 3 minutes talking about other things rather than you donating money. So go do it today and shut me up as far as this goes. We have a Hasidic story. It happened during the times of the Rebbe Marash, who passed away in 1870. So it happened sometime before then, obviously, duh. There was a person who lived in a town, shtetl, a little bit in proximity to the city, the town of Lubavitch, which is in the Vitebsk area of White Russia. And he had a tavern. And unfortunately, there was a priest, which in many of these Hasidic stories, there's a priest who didn't like Jews, and this priest didn't like Jews. And he was really upset that this Jew was making lots of money because all of his parishioners, after they would get done at his church, they would go to his bar, is basically what the deal was. So he decided he's going to open up his own bar. But could you imagine? Here he is. He's standing behind a bar. If you were Catholic, would you go into a bar where the bartender was a priest and get drunk? No, so it didn't really work. People felt really uncomfortable drinking in front of their father, their priest. So they kept going to the Jew. So as the case was, as it happened, the priest wanted to settle things up, and he said to him, listen, I'm closing. I can't compete with you. So he said, let's celebrate. Let's go down to the, get your best vodka, and we'll give a free round to everybody here. So the bartender went down, the Jewish owner, and the priest, dastardly villain, substituted one of the Jews' vodka for his own vodka. And he poured somebody a drink, and the person drank it and died immediately. It had been laced with poison. Now there's a whole investigation. The Jew's arrested. Finally, we'll get the Jew out of the way. They let him out on parole. And he ran immediately to the Rebbe Marash, to the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, and requested an audience. And they told him, no, you can't come today to the Rebbe. He's too busy. And he's like, my life is... Come back tomorrow. Came back the next day. No, too busy. Third day, he was about to go to the Rebbe, and the secretary came and said, come right away to the Rebbe. The Rebbe told him, before he's opened his mouth, I understand your predicament. Go home right now. Catch the next train and buy a first-class ticket. And he said, a first-class ticket? The Rebbe said, I know, first-class ticket, very expensive. These people are usually used to start traveling third class, which didn't have any chairs in it. He gave him the money for the first-class ticket and sent him on his way. And he realized that he didn't know what was supposed to happen. So he's in a first-class compartment, and he just started crying. He said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the people in the next car could hear him crying. So one of the guys got up and said, what are you crying about? So he started to tell him about it. And he told him this whole story about how he's being framed. And little did he realize that these were the judges of the case. And they said, we'll check this out. So when he came to town, they came incognito to check things out. They wanted to stay at the home of the priest. And they got the priest drunk. And the priest, under the influence of alcohol, told him this whole thing that he did. Ha, 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 he's getting rid of the Jew. So when the court trial came, they interrogated him. And he finally admitted that, yes, he was the one who did it. The Jew lived happily ever after. The priest, evidently in Russia, they didn't execute priests. They just sent them for 10 years hard labor. And that's the story. So somebody lived happily ever after. That's going to do it for us. We hope you had a great time listening to us. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We're closing with an instrumental version of Shalom Aleichem. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.